By the way, because we always forget to introduce ourselves, I'm Wendell, or Bob, or whatever.
And I'm Ryan, not the other guy.
Totally the other guy.
Not Twin Wendell. I have a name.
I like the comment that said Twindle. Twindle.
I need that on a t-shirt.
Oh, no, we don't need it. We got other better t-shirts than that. Surely to God, we've got better t-shirts than that.
We got nothing.
We got nothing. Terrible. It's just bad. What are we going to do? Today's Tuesday, November 29th.
And now for your weekly dose of Russian propaganda.
Oh, real fake news, man. It's just dominating the last couple of weeks of news. I don't know what to make of that.
It is. It's definitely the biggest story, and in my opinion, the most horrifying. So before we get to the news, we have to do the traditional corrections. Only one correction this week. I talked about a financial law, which I couldn't remember the name of last week. I got the definition backwards, although the spirit of it was correct. That's Gresham's Law. And Gresham's Law states that if there are two forms of commodity money in circulation, the bad money drives out the good. I said the good money drives out the bad. Spirit of the same as the thing. If there's a good and there's a bad, the good will be hoarded, the bad will be spent. So that's the idea.
But you know how pedantic the internet can be. I mean,
that's why we do the corrections. There were several 5-paragraph YouTube comments. Now, listen, people, if you're writing 5-paragraph YouTube comments, reevaluate everything about your life. If you work in the reality TV industry, I want to produce a show with you where we find people who write 5-paragraph YouTube comments. We follow them around for 2 weeks. I guarantee that'll be an hour of fascinating television.
That show already exists.
What is
it? It's the one that has all the people that live in the house with all their trash. Hoarders.
Oh, we're going to get some comments about that. And they're going to be voluminous. So Gresham's Law, recently, India, which we've talked about India, their capital controls. The gold premium in India went up while the price was going down globally. So
what that means is that the price of gold bullion has gone up dramatically in India, right?
Premium. So the value of it is the same, but they're willing to pay like $12. Now remember, $12 is more than they have any currency that per ounce. They're willing to pay $12 per ounce to own it because supply. So Gresham's Law. Now, another thing that we need to go back to, if we have corrections, we also get to have I told you so. So when we first talked about the India article, we said this was part of the war on cash. This was a move to a cashless society. Everybody said, no, no, no. This is fighting fraud.
That's not what he said. It was fighting fraud is what the prime minister said.
But then he made a weekly announcement and he called for a cashless society. Oh, God, look at that.
First ever I told you so. No, there've been a few. We just haven't been as in your face about it.
This one, it's too obvious. So yes, Modi wants a cashless society. Every leader wants a cashless society, especially if they have an income tax. So get used to it.
The other thing that continues on from the theme of the last several weeks has been real fake news. Fake news is still dominating the headlines, like as if there's some sort of technological solution to the problem.
A lot of people, again, a lot of people in the comments, I really support the idea of somehow getting rid of the fake news. They don't really...
As if there's an algorithm. I mean, well,
it turns out there is one company that's found an algorithm. It's magical. But the
Zuckerberg!
Oh, you love to hate him, don't you? So Zuckerberg posted about it, and beautifully, as if the internet did have some sort of sentience and hates him, like we all do, it posted 2 fake news articles, blatantly fake news articles, on his post.
Now, the ironic thing is that in order to post the real fake news next to the article, you sign up with Facebook for advertising. And so Facebook's advertising platform happily ran these things. And so I think, you know, it's not that we're advocating for fake news. Somebody was like, I can't believe you guys would defend fake news. No, we're not defending fake news. Fake news shouldn't exist. Fake news is a symptom, not the disease. It's just a symptom. You can't, you know, fix the disease by fixing the symptom. It's not, fake news is not the problem. It's a symptom of another problem.
Yeah, in this instance, both of these stories link to websites that had nothing to do with the news articles that were the clickbait. This is purely people gaming the Facebook ad system because Facebook allows that. Because Facebook doesn't sell a product. They need to make money any way that they can. So for them to spearhead this, we've got to do something about the fake news. They're the problem. They're responsible for it. You know, if there's no monetary gain in making fake news, people aren't going to do it.
Well, and, you know, to impose a technological restriction or, you know, legislate a solution here on fake news beyond what we already have, because we've already got lots of laws about, you know, libel, saying things wrong about somebody else, and defamation and those sorts of things. But we don't really have any laws against people making up stuff. And we'll get to more about that in a minute. But there was also this story from the Washington Post about the Russian propaganda effort, quote unquote, Russian propaganda effort to help spread fake news during the election, according to quote unquote experts.
The list of these websites, several of them I frequent, it is a who's who of anti-establishment news. If you don't agree with the status quo, you are on this list. And most, there was the Ron Paul Institute. You know, a lot of people have problems with Ron Paul. He's not perfect, but he's the best presidential candidate we've ever had. But more importantly, WikiLeaks. Now, I literally don't know this, but has anything WikiLeaks ever published been disputed?
I'm not sure. I'm sure that somebody in the comments will tell us.
I don't know if it has. I mean, at least in terms of like the Podesta emails and the cables and all those, I don't think anybody ever disputed that those were real. And they don't editorialize, do they?
No. And that's the problem. I mean, a lot of the problem with WikiLeaks was that they were putting, at least the argument was that they were putting operatives at risk that were working on operations because they didn't redact anything. There was no journalistic component. It's interesting because at the time WikiLeaks was going crazy, you know, the authorities, the FBI and the CIA were saying, you know, we've got assets in the field. We would be a lot better off if this had been leaked to, you know, a newspaper or something like that, because the newspaper, the journalists would have the responsibility to go through and redact. And then after that, you know, we get the Snowden leaks, and Snowden, of course, worked with journalists and Glenn Greenwald. And, you know, that argument was nowhere to be found. It was not, you know, it was not, oh, this is leaked. It was like, no, we need to put the genie back in the bottle. God damn it. We need to just go and raid the UK news office and shred their hard drives and do all this crazy stuff. And it was a completely different attitude than during the Chelsea Manning thing.
But you can't make the argument that Putin is using this for a propaganda arm when they don't editorialize. It's just like, hey, here's this stuff. Often, I don't think they even go through it all themselves. You know, No. They just sort of spray it all out there and it's like, hey, find out what you can from it.
I've been sprayed by Hillary's email.
You have to take a tomato sauce bath to get that off of you. Nothing else will get the stink of it off.
But yeah, here's the actual list of sites from PropNot that was linked in the article mentioned there. And of course, WikiLeaks is there, but also Ron Paul's website is there as well.
And Ron Paul, he responded to this, you know, and listed a bunch of times when the quote unquote real news was fake. It's amazing. But yeah, this literally is just dissenting voices. It's not about getting a lot of people made the argument that was like, hey, this is just like the one we looked at before. This is just blatant clickbait crap. We're not talking about dissent here. Well, the Washington Post disagrees. They think these dissenting websites gotta go.
And that leads us to CNN of all things. Apparently displaying porn, and this story gives you an idea of how fast false information spreads. Now, CNN did not actually display porn, but CNN themselves picked up the story that they actually displayed porn on the air.
And Fox, New York Post, Variety, I don't believe those sources made it into the fake news list.
I don't think they did. No, no.
But just based on one tweet, nobody checked their sources, and this made a huge story. I saw it linked, and I thought it was real. You know, because it was like, oh yeah, it seems like a legitimate source.
Yeah. I mean, it's just this is, it sounds really good. Like I really want to give you guys a program where there can be debate. And so, like, I will sometimes in the future, not now because this is so dumb, but, you know, in the future, there are sometimes that I will take up a contrary position in order to just be able to have an argument, because I think the two of us having an argument for you guys is interesting, even though I don't necessarily go along with it. But I think that mainstream media thinks that most of the audience and the people in the know have the memory of a goldfish. Why do I say that? Well,
are they wrong?
I don't know. I don't know. Let's remind you of something that happened in the not too distant past with Fox News. So there was a lawsuit. Somebody was fired for refusing to tell something on the air that they knew was false. And so there's a lot of really amazing stuff in here. So in February 2003, a Florida Court of Appeals unanimously agreed with an assertion by Fox News that there is no rule against distorting or falsifying news in the United States. The exact quote was, Fox asserted that there was no written rules in distorting news in the media. They argued that under the First Amendment, broadcasters have the right to lie or deliberately distort news reports on the public airwaves. What?
But I agree with them in terms of you should be allowed to lie to people. And it's because... But the thing is, this is Fox News. This is not some crazy flop. Now, you know,
Fox News, they've got news in the name.
If you're a liberal, you might be sitting there saying, well, I knew all along it was Fox News. Well, they're not the only one. You know, you can't, don't, red versus blue doesn't apply here. They're all doing it. So we must protect their right to lie in the same way that we must protect the fake news, because you cannot trust who claims to be the real news.
While I don't disagree with that, are you telling me that a couple of bozos surrounded by derelict technology at a Jack Daniels bar has more integrity than Fox News, a multi-billion dollar company?
It could be the case. It could be that they're just a couple of assholes lying to you about everything. I mean, they do have Christmas decorations in November.
I don't trust anybody that's decorating for Christmas in November. No, I really don't.
It's,
I mean,
wrong. Shouldn't
what,
do it.
What is wrong with us? Yeah, so, you know, the real fake news is not about fake news at all. And you know, Fox News are the ones that have said, you know, we're an entertainment company. But not just Fox News, all of the other companies. If you look at the Constitution of the United States, we've got, you know, the First Amendment, free speech, whatever. But the Second Amendment, freedom of the press. Now, why do you think our founding fathers, you know, sort of made a distinction between freedom of the press and freedom of speech? And I think that that is misunderstanding of the First and Second Amendment is what is at the heart of misunderstanding the fake news thing. A lot of people are like, oh, I saw this on Facebook. It's credible. No, they need to learn that that's not the case. A lot of people are like, it was on Fox News. It's credible. No, clearly not. Clearly not. All credibility that Fox would ever have is gone. Now, the real tragedy here is around the newspaper industry. And this might be a fun, it doesn't really have a lot to do with technology. It does a little bit. This might be a fun story for another time. But, you know, I worked on a really big project with a really big newspaper. And to make a long story short, they were working on a way to capture their subscriptions of their subscriber base. And the editors and the journalists wanted to sort of take over the newspaper. And the ownership of the newspaper was willing to sort of do that because the newspaper, at the time, the newspaper industry was really struggling. And there was some consolidation going on. Make a long story short, we developed a really awesome platform for that, but the newspaper ended up being bought out by a larger consortium. You can probably imagine who. The reality is that there are lots of Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists out there who have integrity and who will not participate in the fake news thing. The problem is that there is a market for fake news, which is created by people in the first place. This is the root problem. Fake news is just a symptom of the problem. The root problem is not fake news itself. You're not going to make that problem go away any more than, you know, to us, trying to resolve the fake news problem this way is like trying to resolve the printing press problem by putting controls on printing presses.
And you have to look at the timing and you have to ask who benefits. So why is the credibility of news suddenly under question? Well, you've got Brexit. They were wrong, completely wrong about that. They give you a million reasons that wasn't going to happen, couldn't happen, and would destroy the country if it did. That didn't happen. Trump presidency, they were wrong about it. They gave you the same million reasons why it couldn't happen, wouldn't happen, and would literally be nuclear holocaust if it did. And he's not president yet, but so far, no radiation.
No radiation.
So if this is sort of, they can save face. They can say, oh, there was fake news, but we're going to put these policies in place and that'll eliminate that. And that'll give them back their credibility, which they don't have and they shouldn't have.
None of these policies involve hiring the Pulitzer Prize winning journalists that no longer have a job as a result of the media consolidation in the late 90s and early 2000s. Until I see a policy that could possibly put those journalists back to work, I'm not going to believe any of this stuff because The journalists that actually fought the system from the inside are just like that journalist that was fired from their job in the 90s and it spent the better part of 10 years in court. So that is the problem, and not fake news.
A lot of those journalists have gone on and monetized their blogs or something like that. And guess what list they ended up on?
The aforementioned WikiLeaks list.
They've all gone right in league with Putin. Just out of the arms of the paper industry, right into the arms of Putin.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though, but it's funny that you go there because a lot of other sort of social collaboration sites have achieved a lot more credibility than even Fox News, Reddit being one of them because of the community participation, which is sad and disturbing, but it's interesting.
And you don't get more left-wing, and I'm not playing left versus right. I think they're both crap, but you don't get more left-wing than Reddit. I mean, time after time we see them crushing dissent and crushing subreddits and stories that they don't like.
I especially like the story about the Reddit CEO caught editing user comments, and when the CEO posted that, yeah, they were editing comments as a comment, it was ruthlessly downvoted.
Yeah, and this stems from the same situation. They have an insanely popular subreddit about Donald Trump, and they hate it. But I think it got too popular too quick, and they were afraid to get rid of it. Because it was like, this might look like we're manipulating the news. So instead of doing that, he just went in and changed all the comments that were critical of him.
Now, should I not have done that? Was that wrong?
Was that bad? You got to wonder, like, was there a moment where he thought, this will be fine?
Apparently, yeah. How long has he been doing that? Is there, you know, can the Reddit security team disclose how many and of what kind of edits the CEO has made? And, you know, most CEOs are idiots. Was there like a dashboard or a control panel? Was he doing this with SQL? If he was doing this with SQL.
I read somewhere that there was an update statement or whatever database they use is actually an insert statement. Somebody was like, no, we use this. And it CASA something or other, Cassandra, I think. And it's like, no, it's an insert in our case.
But so he was writing insert statements to manipulate the comments?
He was writing the database because otherwise it would be logged as a... Now, this also has to do with Pizzagate. We're not going to get into Pizzagate.
Oh, no, Jesus Christ.
But, you know, it's funny that he did that because you give credence to people who believe these kinds of things. When you suppress their speech on your website, change it. You know, it seems like you take something that might seem a little unbelievable. I'm not saying it is or it isn't. We're literally not going to touch it. But you give it credence by crushing it and silencing it.
Yes.
Bad idea.
Definitely, definitely true. It's definitely true that when you crush and silence something,
it doesn't work out. You shouldn't delete comments and silence them because they won't shut up. They won't just be like, oh, I've been deleted. I guess I'll just go away.
In other news, the worst science paper ever filed is filled with plagiarism and garble, and the journalists are clamoring to publish it. Now, this is a paid-for-publishing game, but I thought it was really funny, so we decided to include it.
Well, this ties into the fake news because a lot of people made the argument that you could scientifically make the determination between real and fake.
No.
That you can establish a truth exactly. And while you might be able to in a vacuum, in the real world, there are respected scientific journals. And what's happening here is there's a company that's buying up respected scientific journals just for their credibility and immediately selling the ability to publish any article you want. And that's what happened here. This guy, he purposely, I think he stole from one of the philosophers. Was it Socrates? Or
Yeah. When scientists make discoveries, they publish their results in academic journals. The journals review the discovery with independent experts, and if everything checks out, they publish the work. That's what should happen. That is what did not happen in this case. Instead, it was $500. We'll publish whatever you want.
So he did this specifically to call this out. I mean, he knew it was crap. He plagiarized most of it, changed every third word, and just in some cases the sentences didn't have verbs, and that was on purpose. And he got like 10 offers to publish it, and they ranged from $500 to $1,500, no questions asked. So a couple of them were like, well, you got to change one or two things, and I think they did that just to try and show that they weren't, like, they didn't read it or anything, but they were just like, okay, every submission we tell them to change one or two things, then we publish it, and no one will question us.
Wow. Yeah, nice.
So you can't depend on, this is what happens when you put an authority in charge of the truth. It just becomes corrupted, you know. Money enters into the situation and you get this kind of thing.
Yeah. And this is what part of what Aaron Swartz died for. I mean, he was a student at MIT that was releasing scientific journals for free. He believed that having a gatekeeper for that kind of knowledge is bad because it slows down the spread of knowledge. And, you know, if there is a, you know, if there's a researcher at MIT that's working on, you know, the next big thing in computing, and it's, you know, $500 to publish in a newspaper, maybe they're not going to, or a news journal or whatever, they're maybe not going to pay for that. Maybe some student is going to pick up that mantle, and $500 would be a lot of money for a student to subscribe to an academic journal or, you know, whatever the fee happens to be. And there's no reason that that knowledge shouldn't be out there on the internet. And it's kind of a meritocracy on the internet. And these things sort of take away from that meritocracy. So,
and it's nice to have a barrier to entry because it does weed out some of the garbage, but then you get, you know, from the other end, you have this problem. So is it better or worse? You know, you really just have to take it upon yourself to vet your sources, figure it out for yourself. Don't trust anybody, as they say.
Well, perhaps we could build some sort of social network of trust wherein, you know, a journalist, when they become established and when they do really groundbreaking work, maybe we could give them a prize, or maybe we could, you know, document their exploits or something. And then you could follow that personality, that scientist, that journal or whatever. And then so it's like, oh, you know, I was doing some work on neutrinos or whatever, and Dr. Feynman's like, yeah, this is really good work. And then the reputation in the industry sort of, it works and it's really great. You kind of have that with these journals, but the journal sold out.
All right.
It's a problem.
And don't put me in charge of that network. I've got a price. It's higher than these guys, but it's there.
In other news, there's a Locky ransomware that's going around. So if you use LinkedIn or Facebook and you've given it special permissions, it'll create a file that if you run, you get ransomware. So this ransomware deposits a file on your desktop that if you run it, it will then encrypt your computer. But the way that they're doing that is through the LinkedIn, Facebook type extensions.
I think they were using images, right?
Images, yeah.
So it's not uncommon for your average user to be like, oh, what's this image? Well, I don't remember this. Let me click on it.
And then all of a sudden, it's not.
That's... Your drive gets encrypted. And I think they wanted on average of half a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So about, what was it, like $375 right now?
Yep.
To unlock all of your files.
Nice. Now's a better time. Now's never been a better time to switch to Linux.
Or stop using LinkedIn and Facebook.
I think that might be easier. I don't really care too much for LinkedIn, for either of those things.
No, terrible.
And then the last thing that we've got in sort of the legal news that's slightly disappointing is the $1 billion Getty Images public domain photograph dispute is over. Now, if you're not familiar with this, what happened was there was a photographer who took a bunch of pictures, really good photographer, and put her works in the public domain and the Library of Congress. And so Getty Images, which is a provider of commercial photography, picked up those images from the public domain, or not necessarily Getty Images, one of its affiliates. And, you know, they provide those images on their website and they sell them. And because it's in the public domain, they're allowed to do that. This artist was then contacted by somebody representing a law firm, representing Getty Images and their affiliate company, and said, we found this photograph that we have the rights to on your website. You owe us licensing fees. And it was her photograph. So she sued them for $1 billion because they just wouldn't back down. But she lost. Well, she didn't really, there was no real clear winner on either side, but her claim of $1 billion was dismissed. And so this was somebody using her work commercially. But I think the thing that bit her in the butt is that she made her images public domain. I think Creative Commons would have been a better choice.
Yeah, but the problem here, you know, obviously the argument she was making isn't that they picked up her images and used them. She intended for people to do that. It's that they were going after people who might have done the same.
Yep.
And I think they wanted $120.
Yep.
For her using that public domain image. Yeah.
Yeah. And how many people paid that licensing fee?
Oh, I would say very, very many. I mean, they would have to for it to be worth their time to go through that. I mean, it's automated, but you still have to do the court cases and everything.
Yeah.
They also, the sad part about this, they ruled that everybody would pay their own court fees. So she probably lost a lot of money in court fees fighting this thing.
Yeah, lawyers are not cheap.
No.
So sort of a horrible mess. It's sort of a disappointing ruling that everybody pays their own court fees as well. There was a story that you guys may have seen about Windows 10 sharing telemetry data with third parties. This was a story that ran in a lot of places that Microsoft was sharing data with a company called FireEye about emerging threats and malware and crap like that on people's computers. This story has since been updated to say, oh no, we don't share telemetry with third-party companies. So I think Microsoft is still probably sharing some information, but it probably is just security-related information and not telemetry. But it's still, we included this story because it's scary to think about Microsoft having the telemetry of everybody that's used Windows 10 since you've been using Windows 10.
Right.
And at any moment, they can just say, oh, you know, let's analyze this database. It's probably all right.
And this is Microsoft's word against everybody else's. Probably they're not doing it, but maybe they're just saying they're not doing it.
Well, I mean, even if this were inconvenient, they would just redefine what telemetry meant. So there's like, we're not going to tell you who it is, but we're going to share, you know, all the security data about who runs what program when. Is that telemetry? It's like, well, maybe not technically. Maybe this is just data from Windows Defender or other malware defense programs. Is some of this data necessary for doing that kind of work? Maybe, but the problem here, we think, is lack of transparency.
And you also have to remember that human beings are creatures of habit. Almost all of us are. There might be some truly random people out there, maybe, but most of us aren't. And even if you didn't ever have any sort of login to a specific website or anything, literally your repeated web traffic can identify you.
Mm-hmm.
They have
your fingerprint of like, oh, this guy always checks Reddit at 10 o'clock in the morning.
So anonymized data, no, it still will point right to you if the right people look at it.
Now, the interesting thing here is if users demand it, not of the telemetry thing, like if Microsoft is going to record it, do you think we could get more transparency into what Microsoft is actually recording?
I doubt it. No. Because, you know, they're going to argue that you agreed to it when you agreed to the licensing.
That's the part that bothers me the most. Like, I don't think that I would necessarily have a problem with telemetry, depending on the system that I was using. I mean, if I'm using a work machine and I'm doing limited personal stuff on it, I might be okay with more telemetry to Microsoft. But what really bothers me is that it's completely non-transparent. I have no idea what I'm sharing. Is it a keystroke logger or is it just, you know, generic analytics data? I don't know. It's probably somewhere in between, but it's probably closer on the keylogger side of the spectrum than something else, I would say, since they're not sharing exactly what they share.
And I'm sure that they keep it nebulous because in the future, maybe they want to log your keys. You know, I mean, they don't want to limit themselves in terms of what they can and can't do. And that data is insanely valuable. I mean, they wouldn't have got this deal if they hadn't agreed to share something, because this company wanted that information in lieu of money.
Somebody somewhere inside Microsoft is like, oh, we don't need your private, we don't need your keystrokes. We've got all your private keys from your local key store. It's like, what? No. Oh, this is not good. This is very bad. So they called me Tim. CERN introduces the Large Hadron Collider's robotic inspectors, one of which is named Tim. And I wonder if it was named Tim the Enchanter. It was named for Tim the Enchanter in Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail. But this is a robot that travels around a track in the Large Hadron Collider that looks for thermal anomalies and just, you know, general track inspection. But it can get pretty much, you know, anywhere around the entire Large Hadron facility pretty quickly. And it's an automated sort of inspection robot. Yeah, and they call it Tim.
They already have the track built from a previous monorail. So they just slap some robots up there and they're constantly traveling around monitoring things.
Rumor has it the Monty Python actor forgot what name he was supposed to use, and so he just went with Tim, and it stuck. So, Tim the Enchanter, the robot. Nice. Tor. So, Tor has done something interesting. They've put out a secure prototype for Android. We haven't talked much about Tor, but this is a version of Android that has all the Google stuff removed and all the Tor stuff built in. So I assume that what they're going for is a totally secure, you know, sort of Android black phone that is completely open source and runs on the Tor network.
But I don't see any major carrier tolerating this. I mean, no, wait, I can't. What drives me out of my mind with a Verizon phone that I can't uninstall the NFL network. What? That's a critical app? The NFL network, really?
You can. You just have to root your phone.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. They would never sell you a phone that out of the box gets rid of all the crap.
And then you lose visual voicemail.
Yeah.
And of course, course, this is this definitely is not going to work on any carrier. But you can use it over Wi-Fi, I guess, which is sort of fun. The GitHub page is up if you want to check it out. If anybody decides to install that and take it for a spin, let us know, because we'd like to know. You should make a thread about it on the forum and have pictures and video and crap like that, because there's been a lot of really awesome, interesting stuff on the forum, which you should totally check out. The next thing we've got is VLC 360 Degrees. This is the first player. I don't know if it's the first open source player. There was something that was like the first here, but it's a 360 player video. So you can play, you know, spherical video basically, but it works with VR headsets and things like that from what I understand, or VR headset support is coming. But the videos for this were kind of mind blowing, and there's some sample videos here you can take a look at. But yeah, VLC, the VLC that we all know and love, 360 degree video support.
It's going to be cool when filmmakers adopt this, and think about the kind of like M. Night Shyamalan, twist ending kind of movies. But the only way you see it coming is to look behind you at some point. You know, you're going to have to watch a movie. It's going to be like, you talk about rewatching movies. You're going to have to watch it like 20 times to try and catch all the little things, you know, or hidden meanings or whatever. There are going to be some brilliant directors who do a lot with this.
The 360 degree movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the novelty would wear off pretty quick. There were two 360 degree movies that are on Google Play that I'd taken a look at. I can't remember. One is like Meteors Were Falling. It's sort of a Cloverfield type movie. And I can't remember the other one. And for the first 10 minutes, it was like, this is amazing. And by 10 minutes, I probably mean like 30 seconds. And then after that, it was like, oh, I'm getting bored here. I'm not sure where to look.
I suppose, yeah, that's a problem, especially with how little, like, they give credence to the intelligence of the movie-going audience. You know, it's like, no, you're supposed to be scared. Loud noise, be scared.
Now, I do remember an NVIDIA tech demo. There was an NVIDIA tech demo at Computex, and they had an interesting thing that they would do. They had an audio cue, so you had the surround sound headsets, and I'm not very good at figuring out where sounds come from, but they'd really dial it in. So that, you know, you heard something behind you and you would hear something, you know, just in enough time to turn around, and then you would catch something happening behind you. And so that sort of demo with the headset, I noticed that there were a lot of sound cues and that the sounds were happening, you know, a second to three quarters of a second before whatever it was that was going to happen behind you. So you'd turn around or you'd look or whatever. And so maybe using sound would make that happen a little better. I'm not sure.
Take a cue from first-person shooters. Give me an actor whose job it is to draw my attention to whatever. So like, hey, we need to look over here right now, but, you know, not so obvious.
Who's going to be the Gabe Newell of this 360 degree video? Because at least I give Gabe Newell credit for that style in Half-Life, because I think that went really well. And Portal as well. It's like where you have a mute main character, but you still get to experience a really interesting story.
That could be a whole new type of acting, too. It's like there could be actors that only do that. I'm only the, hey, look over here actor. That's what I do.
How awesome would it be that it's like, you know, you're directing the next Lord of the Rings, and it's like, okay, you're Frodo, but you have a very minor case of severe brain damage. And so you've got like the Ian McKellen type that you're trying to, you know, it's like, okay, now who am I acting with? And it's like, well, you're interacting with the player who has a very minor case of severe brain damage and is never going to say anything or respond in any way to what your character is doing. And so Ian McKellen just quietly goes off and weeps on his own.
YouTube's going to call you an ableist for saying that.
Oh. Sorry. No, my bad.
I'm not.
Faraday Future. Faraday Future is the other electric car manufacturer that nobody has heard about. They appeared out of nowhere last year or a couple of years ago, and I was like, yeah, this is going to give Tesla a run for its money. There's, you know, there's somebody other than Tesla in the game. And it's like, uh-oh, Faraday Future's factory construction has paused. Shipping timelines are at risk.
It's good to have competition. I mean, we definitely need two electric car makers. But it makes you take a step back when... Had anybody pre-ordered yet? Were there pre-orders for these cars?
I'm not sure, actually.
I know they said they couldn't ship this year and they'd expected to, but it does make you question. It's like, well, if they're missing their deadlines like this and they're overestimating, how many bugs are still going to be in these cars when they roll out? You know, do I really want to risk one of these?
Well, I think the first time that I heard about Faraday Futures, I took the rather cynical position that this is probably, you know, whether the people involved with Faraday Futures realize it or not, there could be, you know, sort of larger actors in play. And my, you know, overly cynical view of it at the time was that it's probably the oil industry propping this up as a sham. And so it's like dangling a carrot. It's like, we're going to put a, you know, a carrot in front of some nerds that may be well-meaning nerds that are going to try really hard to come up with this electric vehicle thing. But the closer they get to success, the more we're going to sort of pull the rug out from underneath them. And this is really just going to drive uncertainty and chaos in the electric car market to benefit, you know, big oil or the auto industry or whatever. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just sort of cynically, it's like, well, this is what this smells like.
So would you call these real fake cars?
It's a real fake auto industry, except for Tesla. And it's like, crap.
I bet Putin's involved because he's, you know, oil price really affects him, you know? Connect the dots, people.
Putin is involved with making Faraday Futures not able to get a construction loan to finish their factory.
It's got
to
be.
You heard it here first. Real fake news. It's not good. Some exciting news in the open source world. Open source hardware makers are uniting to start certifying products. All too often, it's been the case that computer manufacturers have said, oh, we're going to use the GPL, or oh, we're going to use Linux, or oh, we're going to do whatever. And then they never actually release full or usable source code for their products. And so others that are earnestly trying to release open source hardware in the industry are getting together to try to come up with some sort of certification for open source products, so you can, you know, buy something and be like, yes, this is completely 100% open source.
How's the NSA going to backdoor any of these?
Well, they'll just backdoor the silicon. They'll just deal with that at manufacturing. I mean, that's how they dealt with the SIM card industry. It's like, we'll just go to where they make the SIM cards and deal with it that way. They'll just go to Broadcom or whoever's making the CPU and deal with it there. So for the intelligence industry, this really doesn't slow them down.
Well, maybe a little bit.
Now, I wonder how pedantic they're going to be with this because, you know, arguably, like, the success with the Raspberry Pi is really super awesome, amazing, but the Raspberry Pi is not really fully open source. Like, the last time I checked, the Raspberry Pi 3 is a 64-bit core, but I don't think you can get any 64-bit software owing to a lack of documentation for it. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I think that the historically, the Raspberry Pi has been plagued with not being able to take full advantage of everything on the silicon. Certainly, there was a problem with the graphics drivers for a long time. And when finally that was released, it was like a night and day difference in performance of the device.
I think it needs to be 100% for this to be a successful endeavor. Because otherwise, I guess to get the branding, you might pay the fee. But if you're not really going to accomplish anything and it's not going to help anybody, I think you're just wasting everybody's time.
I'm not really sure what, you know, what the formula was with Raspberry Pi to be as successful as they were, even despite that impediment. I mean, I guess just the fact that it's $35 is a real driver there. But very quickly, there were a lot of clones, and very quickly, there were a lot of clones even that were less expensive that worked well. But the open source component, philosophically is very important. In space news, an underground ice deposit has been found on Mars that is bigger than New Mexico.
That's, all this time, that was the big question, and the answer is
yes.
There's water on Mars.
There's definitely ice. water ice on Mars. This is interesting because it's water that's a little bit underground, so the water has frozen, but then there's still some wind on Mars that's blowing the dust around, and so the dust is sort of blown over the water, but the water is there on the surface just a little bit below a thin layer of dust.
It was also mixed with dirt and rock. It wasn't pure ice. And this further proves, based on how this exists, that there's no standing water on Mars, certainly. So this is probably the only way you're going to find water on Mars.
Yeah, the Martian atmosphere is only about 1% the density of Earth's. And I think it's the case that, you know, if the surface temperature ever, like in direct sunlight or in whatever conditions, is ever such that it gets warm enough, that the water vapor will just sublimate directly into space because there's not really a lot holding it there.
But it's cool to know that there is some there, and quite a bit, you know, should we ever find some use for it. I'm sure that we could dig that out, purify it.
We should send robots to Mars. But first, they have to fold our laundry.
I like that this managed to fold a shirt in 10 minutes. 10 minutes. I mean, if you just leaving it alone all day, I guess that makes sense. But 10, come on, man, 10 minutes.
$60 million in a laundry folding robot.
Wow.
That's, I understand though, because imagine the dream of, I mean, how much more would you pay for a machine where you just dump clothes into it and it ejects folded cubes? That sounds amazing to me. I would love that.
I've got an idea. We can pitch it to Amazon. What it is you put your clothes in, and if the robot is like, these clothes are too shitty, it automatically orders new clothes on Amazon. It's like the button, but it's the laundry button.
Oh, man. All of my clothes would be gone tomorrow.
At that point, you would have apps, you know, like the Dollar Shave Club type thing. You would have an app that you load on your, you know, your Amazon robot or whatever, and it's like, okay, we're going to go with, you know, like Hipster or Hipster Plus Plus. Depending on what apps you install is what reflects your wardrobe.
We've analyzed your browsing history. We've gone with Basement Dwelling.
Your 12 fedoras will be here next week. Thanks, Alexa. Hey, Alexa, order me 12 fedoras. And everybody that has one at home, it just went off. Sorry. Oh, Lord, what is wrong with us? Not related to the news about the laundry folding robot, but Tesla, thought this was worth a mention. They partnered with SolarCity, or the shareholders agreed to merge with SolarCity, which you guys probably all heard about. But there's this really great YouTube video about a solar installation using Tesla's power pack and the solar grid stuff that powers an island in American Samoa. And so there's a picture of it on Google Earth. But yeah, they're able to capture all of the power needs for the entire island at this solar facility and store like 3 days of power at this facility for the entire island. And Tesla sort of did this to avoid, you know, red tape or, you know, any kind of shenanigans in America. But they did this really, really quickly.
Yeah, it's cool that those batteries are sufficient enough to store all that power, and they complete dark cycle. They still have, now, you know, I'm sure they're not like running air conditioning all day long, but they have power. And they had another island where they didn't use batteries. They used water, pumping water, which is also very cool. They used windmills, solar panels, and pumping water, and completely got rid of the battery component.
Yeah.
Just using, you know, gravity fed water.
Yeah. There was a company that makes, underground UPSs. They dig a big pit and they put a concrete flywheel in it, and that's what is used for emergency power at a couple of data centers that I'm aware of. And the way that it works is when the power is on, it's adding inertia to this giant spinning concrete disc underground, and then when the power goes off, it just keeps spinning, and then it generates electricity. And there's no batteries, there's no anything, but the mechanical efficiency of that thing is enough to keep a skyscraper running for like 10 minutes. Microsoft is working on a UI redesign again for the Windows 10 update, and it's called Project Neon. So apparently they're discovering that the whole Windows 10 as it exists today, where it kind of combines touch and click, is maybe not the best thing, and so they're refining it. So this is sort of interesting, sort of like Metro 2.0 is what this article calls it. It's Project Neon, and so I don't know which is more cringy, Metro or Neon.
Yeah, they're both pretty bad, and I'm sure both implementations will be absolutely terrible. But Microsoft, you know, there's so much more they got to fix before they start working on the UI, in my opinion. That's, you know, it's lipstick on a pig.
I wonder if the holographic, you know, the headgear thing is going to be a big part of this, because I kind of got the impression that the holographic headset thing was going to be a big factor in this, but, you know, I'm not really sure how that's going to work out.
Yeah, that seems like really cool technology, but so far, gaming in VR seemed like a really cool idea, and it's turned out, it seems like, for most people, it's a lot of vomiting. We got to wear these things for 8 hours a day and see what that's like before we start, you know, diving in and being like, yeah, this is a revolution.
I saw a picture on Reddit of a guy on the business class on an airplane, and he was wearing one of those headsets, like the one that's your mobile phone. Apparently he was using a remote app. He was remoting into his laptop, and he was running some obscene resolution on his headgear, and he had like a full-size wireless keyboard on the airplane. And he's like, yeah, I've got a virtual 40-inch screen in my headgear. And it's like, I need that. I would like to sign up for that. how do I get one? Because, you know, it's like, you're going to look like a crazy person. I don't care. Need a 40-inch screen. It's portable. I can strap it to my face. It's fine. Don't care.
What kind of battery life can you expect from that, though? I wonder. I guess it's just the phone?
Yeah, just like probably 8 hours easy. I wouldn't mind a USB power cable going to my headgear. It's totally fine.
On a plane?
On a plane.
I don't know if they let you get that on the plane.
Let me just remote into my laptop from my headgear. It's great. Oh, we got some other news from Mars. Remember the lander that we lost? Apparently it smashed into the ground at 500 kilometers an hour.
That's a big mistake. And it was one little measurement device that was measuring, was it altitude or spin or something like that?
And it was like, I've come to a stop. No.
Yeah, it went over its maximum tolerance. It was spinning too quick or something like that. And so it was just like, hey, we're on the ground.
That led the navigation system to think the lander was much lower than it was, causing its parachute and braking thrusters to be deployed prematurely. So it came to a stop in the air and then plummeted to its death.
So, bad news. But they sort of put a positive spin on it, and they were like, well, this was the test landing, so we'll be able to fix it. That's what this was for. Maybe the next time will be better.
Sorry, guys. Still, it's a really cool project. I mean, how cool is it that we're landing robots on the next planet in the solar system? That's
some,
really...
Some of us are.
Some of us
are crashing them.
Toyota has announced they've got a battery breakthrough. Now, I was really excited about this, but then I read it, and it's like, this is a breakthrough that's going to lead to other breakthroughs, but the breakthrough itself is not immediately commercializable.
Yeah, all they've managed to do is to be able to monitor how loss of battery life works through the electrolytes. So this is not a new battery. This is not more storage or anything. It's just now we can see how it degrades over time to try and figure out how to stop it.
It's a test battery. I wonder if they're going to put the test battery through a battery of tests.
I'm sure. Yes. Well, it's also funny that Toyota doesn't have an electric car. So
what are they doing?
Yeah. I guess they're going to sell it to somebody else.
The article kind of mentions that. It was like, you know, Toyota does not have an intellectual property portfolio to protect it in the case of electric cars. They do have the RAV4. There was an electric RAV4 put out around 2000. And I want to say that it's got more platinum in it at this point than the entire vehicle is worth. So if you happen to have one of those RAV4s, be sure to get the platinum out of it because it's worth a lot of money.
And I think we're pretty limited on platinum in terms of overall earth supply. So Everybody driving one of those isn't really realistic.
Well, that's not even really realistic with lithium either. So
Right. Well,
we've got to figure out something to be more efficient there, but eh. The next up is from the MIT Technology Review. There's immune engineering. Genetically engineered immune cells are saving the lives of cancer patients. So basically, they've taken people's own immune system cells and programmed them to fight cancer.
Yeah, this was cool. But not only that, because children who have cancer often don't have enough T cells, they've come up with like a blanking solution where they take other T cells, blank them for, you know, make them sort of like universal T cells, and then modify them to hunt down cancer. It's very cool technology. Now, of course, it could go very wrong. There's a lot of crazy things they could do with this, but so far it seems really promising.
Something, something T cell zombie apocalypse umbrella corporation.
Well, the other side of it is robots plus longevity. That's going to be a problem. Overpopulation is already a little bit of an issue. If people start living, you know, if cancer stops killing people, what is going to kill them?
Dementia. They're going to wander in traffic.
That's going to be bad for everybody.
This is a really, really interesting story. Perhaps some of the biologists in the audience can give us a little bit more insight as to this kind of thing. I like to think of the biological mechanism as just a very advanced mechanical mechanism. And so I really want to understand the software, the software of that experience, or I want to understand how, you know, DNA codes for both hardware and software, because that's probably the thing that's going to be around, not related to this, but there was another article about how we as a species deal with technological waste, like radioactive material that's going to be here for 200,000 years. And so it's a real problem. You know, imagine, you know, the pyramids. And, you know, let's say that the pyramids were actually a radioactive waste site. How would you, you know, when we discovered them, we didn't understand hieroglyphics. We didn't understand anything. How would you warn future civilizations not to mess with the pyramids because, you know, there was radioactive waste buried under there? And one of the most clever solutions that I saw was to genetically engineer some cats that change their fur color when they go radioactive. And so then you just release the cats around the area and they'll survive. But you create a mythos around the cat that if the cat changes color, you need to run away because you're being poisoned. And so those are the kind of, like, as a society, those are the only things that have survived the last 10,000 years for we as a species. Because 10,000 years ago, we were, you know, farming was the big thing, the big new technology.
You know, you talk about DNA, and if you learn about DNA at all, you start to quickly understand that that is basically our programming. Like, you think you do what you want to do? No. You do what your DNA wants you to do most of the time. If we get into modifying that we can just, we can literally, like, what drives humans, we can make changes to it. That's amazing, but terrifying.
Well, it's not just software, though, because, you know, there are instances where DNA codes for machinery that then does something else. And so it's like, is it, you know, the DNA coding for another machinery that then codes for behavior? Or, you know, is it both, or is the behavior an emergent property of the design of the machine? Kind of like the gears in a clock will tell time, but, you know, the gears in the clock have been designed specifically to tell time. And so if you had, you know, DNA that builds something like a clock, there's not really any way to know what the clock is going to do, tell time, before it's built until you build it. And so it's really, really interesting.
And there's so much that they don't know. They're definitely poking into a dark hole here.
Yes.
I'm not against it, but crazy things are going to happen as a result.
And the last story of the week, we've run long, we've been rambling, and the stories have all been really terrible this week. But Apple has decided that it's not the right thing to do to hold your iPhone 7 to your head.
So, now what is the primary function of the iPhone? Remind me. I believe it's a phone, right?
Status symbol.
Now, of course, a lot of people will argue that who talks on a phone anymore? You know, this is a reason just to text or email, which I would love. Oh, my God. But, of course, I don't want this for iPhones. I want it for office phones. It's like, don't send me the email and then call me to talk about the email. But, yeah, this is a crazy thing. And
if you don't believe us, here's the actual Apple article.
Apple is literally saying, maybe not the best idea. Now, this could fall into the whole thing where it's like, how can we sell them more items? We need to move these hands-free items. How are we going to do that? Let's scare them. Scare them into buying them.
You got a tinfoil burka with a hole for your ear. That's the solution.
No, it would have to be sort of like an echo chamber to reflect the sound. So that you're like holding it out here with a little tube. You know, like those old school guys who, like, the first hearing aids.
Yeah, it's like coming out of your head.
With the big apple on the side of it. Oh, it's coming soon from the Apple store. $75.99.
Oh, that's it for this week. We'll see you guys next time. Oh, we've got a store. There's products in the store. Patreon's at record levels. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you to all the patrons. We have
we hopefully have good audio this week. Everything is hooked up.
You've noticed,
dial in the settings.
We've gone to the microphones right in our faces. I don't know why it took us this long to think about it, but hey, we tried to keep them out of the shot. We've given up on that. We're just going for good audio.
We didn't have a mixer in some of the other parts either. So we have everything in. Now it's just a matter of dialing in the settings.
Yep. So thank you. And next month, I pretty much got plans for all the next month's money. And we're going to keep making improvements. So hopefully you'll notice a difference.
We're still 21 days out on mouse pads. Those are not going to be here in time for Christmas. But we are working on some more shirt designs that will be more interesting. There's a thread on the forum. If you guys want to look at that and you have any ideas for stuff that we want to do. I think the Milk Raptor is probably going to factor in pretty heavily. If you don't know what that is, people on the forum can point you the right way. But it's just from the game stream stuff. So thank you. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Twindle.